In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. The CDC quietly reported that 94% of people who died from COVID-19 in the United States had a comorbidity. That means only 6% of people were killed by the virus alone. According to this report, that would be close to 10,000 deaths in the United States instead of 183,000. The official worldwide COVID-19 deaths are at 884,000. However, adjusting by 6% is nearly 53,000. The unadjusted data was used to support decisions to mandate mask wearing, issue lockdowns, quarantines, and border closure. We listen to several presentations and speeches on the topic of vaccines and pandemic-related economic destruction. We hear first from Dr. Stanley Plotkin, the world's leading vaccine maker, who was deposed in a court case between two parents who disagreed on vaccinating their children. He testified for the vaccination. Let's have a listen.
Do any of the vaccines on the childhood schedule contain monkey kidney cells?
Well, the polio vaccine does.
Are you aware of any simian, monkey, viruses, meaning viruses that come from primates, that contaminated polio vaccines and infected individuals receiving the polio vaccine?
Yes, SV40.
Okay. And what does SV40 stand for?
Simian virus 40.
Okay. Was it the 40th simian virus found? Is that
yes.
Why it's called? Are you aware of any virus from any animal other than simian or bovine that is in any vaccine?
Yes, there's a pig virus present in one of the rotavirus vaccines, circovirus.
Do any of the vaccines in the childhood vaccine schedule contain blood serum from calves or other bovines?
Calf serum is removed before the vaccine is used because you don't want to sensitize the vaccinee to cows.
What is this?
Vaccine excipient and media summary.
Can you go to Kinrix on the first page?
Yes.
DTaP IPV. Do you see in the third line down, it says calf serum? Do any vaccines on the childhood schedule contain embryonic guinea pig cell cultures?
Varicella vaccine was passaged in guinea pig cells.
Do you know of any vaccines contain cow's milk in it, derived
from
cow's milk?
Oh, well, it could be, casein, for example, could be.
And if there was casein in the vaccine, a child could become sensitized to that, correct?
Well, I'm not sure about that.
You're not sure anymore about that? Do any vaccines contain egg protein?
Oh, yes, influenza.
Do any vaccines contain gelatin from pigs?
Yes.
Do any vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule contain human albumin?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What is human albumin?
Human albumin is part of human serum. It's part of the blood that is liquid.
None of it remains in the final product?
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah, because that could be problematic, right?
Well, it could be. I mean, if the individual is not healthy.
Or if maybe some of the human blood components bind to some of the aluminum and develop antibodies, self-antibodies, correct?
If they develop antibodies against a serum component, that would not be good.
Do any vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule contain MRC5 human diploid cells?
Yes. Rubella, varicella, hepatitis A.
What are MRC5 cells?
They are human fibroblast cell strain. They were created by taking fetal tissue and from a particular fetus that was aborted by maternal choice, and the cells, the so-called fibroblast cells, were cultivated.
Do any vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule contain WI-38 human diploid lung fibroblasts?
Well, they used to, but I don't think anything is made in those cells anymore.
If you could turn to page 3 for MMR and MMRV, do you see that within the ingredient list that lists WI-38 human diploid lung fibroblasts?
Yes, I do see that.
Isn't it true that human DNA in vaccines is typically purposely fragmented?
Yes, and I would say mostly for theoretical reasons, doesn't want to put DNA into intact DNA into vaccines.
You familiar with insertional mutagenesis?
Yes.
Do you have any study to show that injecting millions of pieces of human DNA into babies and children is safe?
The only studies are all the safety studies that have been done on vaccines.
Okay. Wasn't the purpose of this study to help develop a human cell line or to support the use of human cell lines in the creation of vaccines?
The idea was to study the cell strains from fetuses to determine whether or not they could be used to make vaccines.
This study involved 74 fetuses.
Yeah, 76.
76. Mm-hmm. And these fetuses were all 3 months or older when aborted, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What organs did you harvest from these fetuses?
Well, I didn't personally harvest any, but a whole range of tissues were harvested by co-workers.
Okay. And these pieces were then cut up into little pieces, right?
Yes.
And they were cultured?
Yes.
Okay. Some of the pieces of the fetuses were pituitary gland that were chopped up into pieces to
mm-hmm.
Okay, included the lung of the fetuses?
Yes.
Okay, included the skin?
Yes.
Kidney?
Yes.
Spleen?
Yes.
Heart?
Yes.
And tongue?
Yeah. I don't recall, but probably yes.
Are you aware that one of the objections to vaccination by the plaintiff in this case is the inclusion of aborted fetal tissue in the development of vaccines and the fact that it's actually part of the ingredients of vaccines?
Yeah, I'm aware of those objections. The Catholic Church has actually issued a document on that which says that individuals who need the vaccine should receive the vaccines regardless of the fact, and that I think it implies that I am the individual who will go to hell because of the use of aborted tissues, which I am glad to do.
Okay. Do you know if the mother is Catholic?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But she should consult her priest.
Do you believe that someone can have a valid religious objection to refusing a vaccine?
No.
Do you take issue with religious beliefs?
Yes.
Okay. You have said that, quote, vaccination is always under attack by religious zealots who believe that the will of God includes death and disease?
Yes.
You stand by that statement?
I absolutely do.
Okay. Are you an atheist?
Yes.
Okay. Do you accept that some people hold religious beliefs that are inherently unprovable?
Yes, I'm sure they do.
When you were a child, what vaccines did you receive?
Diphtheria. In childhood, I think it was probably only diphtheria.
That was the deposition of the world's leading vaccine maker, Dr. Stanley Plotkin. He created the rubella vaccine. This is also significant as flu vaccines are becoming mandatory in some areas in the United States. The list in the deposition includes just the animal and human tissue that the virus grows on, and sometimes it remains in the vaccines when injected into newborn babies. Dr. Plotkin didn't include other vaccine ingredients such as adjuvants, namely aluminum, found in almost all vaccines, or preservatives such as polysorbate 80 or mercury, which is still in flu vaccines as thimerosal. The COVID-19 vaccine that many believe was prepared prior to the pandemic at the Bill and Melinda Gates funded pharmaceutical corporations Moderna and Inovio are not the same types of vaccines being discussed. Doctors are saying this mRNA or messenger RNA vaccine will make you a transhuman, genetically modified organism. We go now to hear a presentation by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. speaking in Berlin late August 2020. Kennedy says, quote, "Governments like pandemics like they love wars. It gives them power. It gives them control. It gives them capacity to impose obedience on human beings."
We are standing here all together to try to tell the truth to the people.
I am Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Excuse my voice, which should get better as I talk. And let me explain to you a little bit about the journey that brought me here. I run the biggest water protection group in the world. It's called Waterkeeper Alliance. And back in the early 2000s, I was suing big coal-burning power plants in the United States for discharging mercury. At that time, and my only concern was the impact of the mercury on fish and on human health of the human beings who ate the fish. Around that time, it came to my attention that there was also large amounts of mercury in vaccines, much larger exposures to children than any child would ever get from eating fish. And so I began to address that, and we started an organization that was trying to have a very limited scope, which was trying to remove the mercury from vaccines. Little by little, I came to understand that there were larger problems with vaccines, and the central problem, and the one we were most deeply concerned with, was that vaccines in the United States were not safety tested. They have an exemption that is not available to any other medical product. And that exemption, which most people cannot even believe, is an artifact of the CDC's legacy as the Public Health Service, which was a quasi-military agency. And at the time that the vaccine system, the vaccine program was launched, the purpose was a national defense purpose, and they wanted to make sure that vaccines could be quickly formulated and deployed in order to derail attacks by foreign countries with biological substances. So they removed the regulatory impediments, including the necessity to test vaccines, to safety test vaccines against placebos. And so my very narrow purpose in starting the Children's Health Defense was to address this problem and get vaccines properly safety tested. Because if they're not safety tested, nobody can tell you with any medical authority whether that vaccine is injuring more people than it's saving. And yet, as we continued on with this advocacy, it became very clear that there were other problems as well. There was problems with the corruption in our political system. The pharmaceutical companies had not only corrupted our politicians with huge amounts of lobbying money, they had captured the agencies that are supposed to protect Americans from public health threats, the CDC, the FDA, the HHS. They had captured the press in our country. Huge influxes of advertising dollars, which had neutralized the press, and they had effectively subverted American democracy by neutralizing all of those institutions that the founding fathers of our nation had created to stand between a greedy corporation and a vulnerable child. The Congress had been corrupted. The regulatory agencies were captured. They had become sock puppets for the industry they're supposed to regulate. The press had been sidelined. And worst of all, they had passed a law in our country in 1986 that gave pharmaceutical companies complete immunity from liability. So there was no incentive for any of those companies to make vaccines safe. And little by little, we recognized that this was not just an American issue. this was a global issue. I came 2 years ago when I was arguing the Monsanto case, and I met my partner here, Senta Dupuy. And Senta already understood the connection that had taken me so long to formulate between toxics in our environment, and the capture of our agencies and our political structures by those powerful companies. She also recognized that pharmaceutical companies were the most powerful, more powerful than oil, more powerful than the chemical industry, and a greater threat not only to our children's health, but to all the institutions of democracy, not in the United States, but all around the globe. And I'm very glad that Tina Choi helped Senta to organize Children's Health Defense Europe. We are here today to announce, to launch the beginning of this organization. We've been very, very successful in the United States. We recognize that the pharmaceutical industry is operating and capturing politicians and running governments in every nation on the globe. And if we win this battle just in one nation, the United States, we're still going to lose it globally. So we need people of goodwill, people who have courage, people who have a nonconformist way of thinking, who understand that we are being lied to, that the entire political structure today is saturated in pharmaceutical propaganda. And we have watched over the past few years something that is extraordinary. We are at an inflection point, I believe, in human history. The largest and most critical inflection point that humanity has ever encountered. For many years, totalitarian and authoritarian states have used the power of fear to engineer compliance in populations. I grew up understanding what happened in World War II in our country, and during the Nuremberg trials, Hermann Göring was asked by the prosecutor, how did you make the German people comply? And Göring said, it's not just Germany. This works in any country, whether it's a fascist country or a communist country or a monarchy or a democracy. All the rulers need to do is to tell people that there's something they need to be fearful of, to point a finger at that source of their fear. And you can make human beings do anything you want. You can make them go to slaughter like sheep. You can make them obey. During the same Great Depression that spawned Adolf Hitler, we were very lucky in our country that we had a leader, Franklin Roosevelt. And he said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He understood that fear would drive us into totalitarianism. Well, the biosecurity agenda that people like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and Davos and all of these people who are running now the global economy, they have understood for years that they have a power that no totalitarian government has ever had available to it, which is the biosecurity. You know, and Hitler could point at the Jews and say, those are the big threat. We need to be frightened of them. And you guys, everybody else needs to obey so that we can fight them off. Other countries were scared of the Bolsheviks. In the United States, you know, our demagogues point to the Mexicans or dark-skinned people and say, we need to be scared of them, or terrorists. And, you know, all of those things get us to voluntarily relinquish our human rights, our civil rights, and walk like sheep into the abattoir. But now they have a source of fear that is the most pervasive and all-encompassing power that they've ever had, which is the fear of pandemics. Governments love pandemics the same way that they love wars, because it gives them power, it gives them control, and it gives them the capacity to impose obedience on human beings. And today we have an inflection of new technologies that give governments the capacity to impose controls on populations that have never been imagined before in human history by any tyrant in history. We have 5G, which has created a surveillance state. 5G is not here for your benefit. It's not here so that you can, it's going to make your life better because you can download your video game in 6 seconds rather than 29. The only reason for 5G is because it allows these big data companies run by Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Jeffrey Bezos to harvest our data, to listen to your conversations on your cell phone. They've always been able to do that, but there was no way for them to transport that data, to subject it to analytics, and then to monetize it and to sell it. Bill Gates today is building a city in Arizona, 80,000 people, with a data center that will be able to take all of this new data, the data on your Alexis in your home. You think that Alexis is working for you? Alexis isn't working for you. She is spying on you. Your cell phone is spying on you. They have biometric facial recognition systems, your GPS. All the satellites that Bill Gates brags that his satellites will be able to monitor every square inch of the planet 24 hours a day. They're going to know, and then they have another innovation, which is digital currency. And once they have digitalized our currency and gotten rid of the cash economy, they have absolute control over us because they'll be able to tax every transaction. The banks will be able to cash in on every transfer of wealth, every transaction, no matter how minuscule, no matter how small, but also they'll be able to enforce obedience. Because if you're disobedient, they'll be able to shut down your bank account and starve you. And you'll have no access to cash. And many people argue that this pandemic was a plandemic, that it was planned from the outset, that it's part of a sinister scheme. I can't tell you the answer to that. I don't have enough evidence. A lot of it feels very planned to me, but I don't know. But I will tell you this. If you create these mechanisms for control, they become weapons of obedience for authoritarian regimes, no matter how beneficial or innocent the people who created them. Once you create them, they will be abused. 100% guarantee that they will be abused. And all of the people who are out on the street now, who are arguing with these, with this new imposition that we're seeing all around us, of authoritarian control, of people being told, wear your mask. And you know, I think everybody in Europe, everybody in Germany, everybody in the United States, if they were told, here's why you should wear a mask, here's the science that says it will help, here is the science that says it works, that you will stop transmission to other people, everybody would wear it with no problem. What we know is that we're not being dealt with honestly. We're being told, this is the science. But it's not, it's an appeal to authority. It's science because Tony Fauci and Bill Gates tell us it's science. We want to see the studies. We want to see the studies on hydroxychloroquine. We want to see the studies on whether the lockdown is killing more people than the coronavirus. We want to see real science and real risk assessments. And we are not going to take the word. My father told me when I was a child, people in authority lie. And we all, if we are going to continue to live in a democracy, we need to understand that people in authority lie. People in authority will abuse every power that we relinquish to them. And right now, we are giving them the power to micromanage every bit of our lives 24 hours a day. They're going to know where we are. They're going to know the money that we spend. They're going to have access to our children. They're going to have the right to compel unwanted medical interventions on us. We, you know, the Nazis did that in the camps in World War II. They tested vaccines on gypsies and Jews. And the world was so horrified after the war, we signed the Nuremberg Charter. And we all pledge when we do that, we would never again impose unwanted medical interventions on human beings without informed consent. And yet in 2 years, all of that conviction has suddenly disappeared. And people are walking around in masks where the science has not been explained to them. They are doing what they're told. They are orchestrating, these government agencies are orchestrating obedience. And it is not democratic. It's not the product of democracy. It's the product of a pharmaceutical-driven biosecurity agenda that will enslave the entire human race and plunge us into a dystopian nightmare where the apocalyptical forces of ignorance and greed will be running our lives and ruining our children and destroying all the dreams and dignity that we hope to give to our children. And the launch of this organization, Children's Health Defense in Europe, is a beachhead. It's an announcement to the world that we are not going to take it. We are building institutions to fight your institutions. And you have global institutions, and we now have a global institution. And we are going to be out tomorrow with the biggest crowd in German history, and they're all going to be saying peacefully the same thing. We are not going to let you take our democracy away. We are not going to let you take our health away. We are not going to let you take our freedoms away. We are not going to let you take our children away. And I'm very proud of the people that I'm sitting at this table with, who are people who have the courage to challenge, to speak truth to power, and to think independently, and to break away from the orthodoxies that are enslaving so much of the human race. Thank you.
That was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the nephew of John F. Kennedy Jr., who said 7 days before his assassination, quote, "There's a plot in this country to enslave every man, woman, and child. Before I leave this high and noble office, I intend to expose this plot." We go to hear Michelle Chesedevsky, award-winning author and professor of economics emeritus at the University of Ottawa. He is the founder and director of the Center for Research on Globalization. His presentation is titled Political Virus.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Chesedevsky. This is a program of the Center for Research on Globalization, Global Research, based in Montreal. And today I would like to focus on the virus, but on what might be described as the political virus. The fact that this COVID-19 is playing a key role in explaining policy decisions at the highest levels of government. We are currently living history, and by far this is one of the most serious economic and social crises in modern history. On the 11th of March, 2020, the orders were given from higher up, emanating from the financial establishment, the World Economic Forum, the foundations and the billionaires, to implement a lockdown, confinement, but also the closing down of 193 national economies, namely the member states of the United Nations. Now, reflect on the decision-making process which underlies this decision to close down simultaneously the economies of all these countries and essentially to close down the economy of planet Earth. And we're talking about the real economy. We're not talking about financial institutions. We're talking about real people. We're talking about companies. We're talking about people who have lost their jobs. We're talking about the impact of this measure on employment, poverty, and beyond poverty, famine and despair. And these measures were applied in both the developed countries, essentially the Western world, Japan, Korea, Australia, and in the developing world, namely Southeast Asia, Latin America, and so on. In other words, and of course, Sub-Saharan Africa. And how does one explain this decision? If you followed the election campaign in the United States, and I'm fortunately not involved in that debate, we're here in Canada, but Joe Biden says candidly that
we can find the light,
the economic collapse of these 193 countries is caused by the virus, big V. In other words, the virus becomes a political concept. And you may have noticed the political speeches, and they are replicated in Western Europe. Emmanuel Macron in France, Boris Johnson in the United Kingdom. The collapse of the economy is attributed to the virus. Now, I beg to differ, because the virus does not have any impact whatsoever on economic variables. It doesn't affect the levels of employment, it doesn't affect the levels of poverty, it doesn't trigger bankruptcies. What happened? On March 11, the World Health Organization declared a pandemic. And it also declared confinement and closure of economic activity, but that decision was not taken by the World Health Organization. But it was taken by the World Economic Forum, powerful financial groups, foundations, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Ford Foundation, so on. They had earlier met in Davos in the month of January. And the narrative is as follows. It says that economic activity at the level of planet Earth is an obstacle to public health, and that you have to close down your economies with a view to resolving a health crisis. Essentially, COVID-19 provides the pretext and the justification to close down the global economy with devastating economic and social consequences. This, together with the mask, social distancing, which are presented to public opinion as a protection to their health, which is absolute rubbish from the scientific point of view. We have tons of studies, and we can even quote Fauci. Although Fauci says one thing a few months ago, and then he refutes and says the mask has to be implemented, the wearing of the mask has to be implemented universally, universally. Now, all these are lies. And when Joe Biden or Bill Clinton make statements blaming the virus for economic collapse, blaming the virus for the closure of the national economy, well, my first reaction, that borders on ridicule. It borders on stupidity, but it's not stupidity. It's fraud. It's corruption. It's a lie. Anybody knows, common sense, that if you close down your economy during a public health crisis, you paralyze all economic activities, and that in turn, let's be very clear, the impact of this closure of the economy is far more serious than the pandemic itself. It has impacts on mortality and morbidity, and scientists can corroborate that, and social scientists, economists, have analyzed it. And the international organizations such as the ILO and even the World Bank have acknowledged it. But what they don't acknowledge it is the decision-making process from higher authority of the financial establishment, global capitalism, dictating this measure. And why do they do that? It seems absurd. Why do they need to impoverish people and contribute to bankruptcy? Well, there's a very simple reason to that, is that they have increased and expanded their wealth, and that started in the course of the month of February with the financial crash. And now what is happening? The landscape of the global economy, it also a devastating process which affects the livelihood of millions and millions and billions of people who lose their jobs, who lose their livelihood, who can't make ends meet, who can't pay their debts. And then what happens? In the aftermath, which is called the reset, okay? They call it the reset. And now the reset is to come to the rescue of those who have been the victims of this crisis, but of course it's all due to COVID. And then they blame COVID on China. What happens is that these companies, the financial establishment will start picking up the pieces of the bankrupt enterprises, the airline companies which are in bankruptcy, virtually every single airline, major airline in Latin America is in bankruptcy. What will they do? They will appropriate the real wealth with the masses of money wealth which they have accumulated in the course of the crisis, particularly during the month of February. Now, there are many lies. First of all, and I've reflected on this, the act of closing down the global economy is an act of genocide. We might describe it as economic genocide. It has the bearing on the lives of millions and millions of people. That is corroborated. And it is not something which is spontaneous. And it's certainly not due to the virus, to this small virus, no. And now they are telling us, and we are believing that, the virus responsible for poverty, unemployment, despair. It's a nonsensical statement, but people are intimidated with the fear campaign, with the disinformation campaign, and with the fact that this virus is considered as very, very dangerous, very dangerous, threatening the future of humanity. It's not. All the science and peer-reviewed reports confirm that the virus, the coronavirus 19, which incidentally its official name is SARS-2. Its official name is SARS-2, which means it's part of the SARS-1 family of viruses, and it is tagged as something which is similar or akin to seasonal influenza coupled with pneumonia. I don't want to get into the discussion of the virus itself, but I can say, having reviewed the literature, that the RT-PCR test, which is there to confirm positive cases, doesn't mean anything, because a positive case doesn't mean that you have it, and a negative case might mean that you do have it. But the virologists have come certainly to a consensus that the PCR test doesn't provide you with an information as to the dangers of COVID-19, and it's not even possible to say whether it was COVID 1, 2, 3, 4 or 19 which were responsible, because it's an aggregate of viruses and particles. Now, the second element is the estimates. What our governments have been doing, not in all countries, but you can see it in some countries, certainly in the United States and Canada and Britain, they are there. They want to push up the numbers. They even hire consulting firms. In Britain, they hired Deloitte Touche, an accounting firm. They want the numbers to go up. They want more tests. And with more tests, of course, they will get positive cases. But those positive cases don't mean a thing. And in the United States, again, there are even financial incentives which are given to clinics to have more admissions, and then you tag them as COVID-19. With regard to death certificates, there's a vast literature. Medical specialists have spoken out. The death certificates are fake. The CDC in the United States changed the criteria. Previously, they were using criterion determined in 2003. And the website of Robert Kennedy Jr. has revealed that if they had stuck to their previous criteria, the deaths attributed to COVID-19 would be 90% less. Okay, in other words, there's a fabrication of the deaths, of the causes of death. In some cases, somebody dies on a motorbike crash, and then of course he's identified as COVID-19. Heart attack, anything is COVID-19, pushing up the death rates and then creating panic. And creating panic with the support of the mainstream media.
Will there be an official demand for those accountable in knowingly distributing false data that was used to support the economic lockdown orders? The Unite for Freedom march held 400 people in Trafalgar Square. In London, where many speakers delivered impassioned speeches, including David Icke. Let's take a listen.
Thank you. What a joy it is to look out upon an island of sanity in a world. We gather here today because a dangerous disease, a deadly disease, is sweeping across this land and across this world. And it's not COVID-19, it is fascism. Fascism justified by the illusion pandemic of COVID-19. A virus, I must give it credit, is so well equipped for every eventuality. You must not go nearer than 6 feet to another person to protect you from the virus. So now it's got a bloody tape measure. You must not stay with anyone outside your bubble for more than 15 minutes. Now it's got a bloody watch. And we are going to make masks mandatory, but not until the end of next week. Now it's got a bloody calendar. We have a virus so intelligent that it only infects those taking part in protests the government wants to stop. Why is it nonsense? Why can anyone with half a brain cell on activity see, or active duty see, that it's a nonsense? Because they are making it up. So why? Why are they doing that? Well, I can answer that with another point, another question. How could I have predicted current events decades ago? How could Aldous Huxley have done it in the 1930s? How can George Orwell have done it in the 1940s? Simple. Current events are not random. They have not just happened. We are seeing a long, long planned agenda rolling out in a script. And it is destined, if we do not stand up now, to end with the total global subjugation of the human race, not least technologically. We now are standing at an amazing point in history where we are at a fork in the road. If we go on allowing the psychopaths to dictate our lives, this is not going to end well. But if we remember where the power is, then this can end in a dramatically short time. The power is with us. Percy Shelley understood this when he wrote 200 years ago, his ode so appropriately named, The Mask of Anarchy. Rise like lions after slumber, in unvanquishable number. Shake your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep have fallen on you. Ye are many, they are few. And those words were written in 1819, and so much of humanity still has not learned the lesson. This whole subjugation and imposition of fascism on the human race worldwide is being run not by health professionals even, but by psychologists. Just down the road there, yards from where we are, is the British government's cabinet office owned private company called the Behavioral Insights Team. And its job is simply to study human psychology and then to play out what it's learned to remodify the behavior of the population. And they are focusing on our kids more than anyone. What they don't want us to know, the biggest mind trick they play on us, is this. They want us to believe that authority has power. Authority has no power. Authority's power the world over is only our power, which we give to them. When thousands of people headed to the beaches a few weeks ago, there was no chance of unsocial distancing. So they were sitting together in their thousands. The local authority declared a major incident. Okay, declare it, but what are you going to do about it? Well, there's nothing we can do, is there? There's too many people that won't obey. Exactly. This world is controlled by a tiny few people because of a simple sequence of imposition and acquiescence. All the way down the pyramid, imposition, acquiescence. The next level acquiesces and imposes on the next level, and then it goes down to us, the people. And if we acquiesce to that level of the hierarchy that seeks to impose on us, i.e. government, police, then we complete a circuit between the tiny few in the shadows and the entire global population. And that circuit means that a tiny few impose their agenda on billions of people. How do we break that sequence? We stop acquiescing. Human race, get off your knees. The lion sleeps no more. Stay in your homes. No. Wear a mask. No. Let your kids be psychologically dismantled. No. It is time, it is well past the time, where we learn the lessons of history. The entirety of human history is one of the few controlling the many, because the many acquiesce to the few. Enough! Less. And I say to the police officers that are policing this, you have children, you have grandchildren.
Freedom, 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 freedom.
And you are enforcing the fascism which your own children and grandchildren will have to live with. Join us, for goodness sake, and stop serving the psychopaths. There are billions of us at the core of this psychopathic web. You would get them in one room. I think I can see a way out of this.
Yes.
Come on, people of the world, Let's go!
That was author David Icke, who has warned everyone for years that those in positions of leadership aren't who they appear to be. The organizer of that event was fined £10,000. He set up a GoFundMe account, and then that was shut down. The limit of what you will accept is the boundary. The dismantling of societies, including defunding the police, may appear to some as a step toward a more aware, socially conscious, and compassionate way of life. However, this is a wicked bait and switch. The cryptocracy behind this effort has shown you their reset plan. It's quite disturbing how this timeline fits in with Kent Bain's book, Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan. That's a reality etched in stone, whispered in hallways, and what President John F. Kennedy wanted to stop, the enslavement of mankind. We're shown future visions of enslavement, full-spectrum surveillance 5G cities such as Wuhan, China, Sidewalk Labs in Toronto, and Bill Gates' so-called smart city in Arizona. It's important to remember the Italian study linking chronic exposure to fifth-generation millimeter radiation and the body producing the COVID-19 virus as a normal reaction. Dr. Cowan also explained the same phenomena in his March 2020 presentation. This is critical to grasp because of the trillion-dollar build-out of 5G installations worldwide. If you were told by telecom corporations your body will have an adverse viral reaction from chronic exposure to fifth-generation millimeter radiation, that will reach pandemic proportions, most people would obviously refuse. Instead, you're told that you can download a movie 20 seconds faster. Do you see where this is going? It's known that changing the fifth-generation millimeter wave frequency range from 30 to 60 or 90 is an important variable. 5G at 90 gigahertz is a crowd control weapon. 5G at 60 gigahertz is known to break apart the oxygen molecule. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.